A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting. Hello, this is Sarah from the left, and I am here with Jean, a listener of Pantsuit Politics and member of our Pantsuit Politics book club, who lives in central New York and is a stay-at-home mom. And we are here to discuss Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance, our March Pantsuit Politics book club pick. Hi, Jean. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
Good. So I asked Jean to be on the show because she had very passionate opinion and take on Hillbilly Elegy. What'd you think of the book, Jean?
I hated it.
Why did you hate it?
Other than finding some of it kind of offensive, I didn't see where it did what it claims to do. It doesn't really make you understand anything. And if his point is to make you not believe a stereotype about a person, it doesn't do a very good job of it.
So I guess we should talk about what the book claims to do. So it's a memoir, and J.D. Vance grew up in part of eastern Kentucky and southern Ohio, and then went into the military and on to, I believe he went to Yale and became an investment banker. And so he's sort of billing himself as a sort of, I don't know if advocate's the right word, but like, I came from this place that nobody understands, and I'm going to try to help you understand the sort of low income, low socioeconomic status of particularly sort of Appalachian white Americans. And so is that sort of where you were coming from? Is that what you thought the book was kind of offering up?
Most of what I had heard about the book beforehand was people saying it was a good way of understanding why people would vote for Trump, mm-hmm. especially when it wasn't in their best interest. It's not even written around the time of Trump, so it doesn't really do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think so that's definitely, he became sort of this like Trump Trump Land disciple. And I'm not really sure he asked for that, but I think that's definitely how the book was billed, for sure.
I don't know. He just kind of feeds the stereotypes instead of dismantling them, I guess.
Well, I don't think you're the only person that felt like that. My friend Leslie, you know, I was like, you got to read this book. You got to read this book. And then she read the book and she was like, I did not like this book. I did not feel like he did what he told me he was going to do, which was help me understand these people any further. I mean, so I definitely don't think you're the only person that had that reaction. Did you read our February book, Strangers in Their Own Land?
I just finished that a couple days ago, actually.
Did you think she did a better job of doing that?
Yes.
Yeah, I did too. I actually finished that book after Hillbilly Elegy and texted my friend Leslie and was like, okay, this book did what you thought Hillbilly Elegy was going to do, but probably didn't. And I think that, you know, some of this, you know, I think it took off as this, the media decided he was the explanation for all things Trump. And I'm not, like I said, I don't know if he asked for that. And that's a lot to put on sort of a memoir generally. But, you know, the book got published for a reason because they felt like it was a memoir that explained a certain part of the country. And so you felt like it just perpetuated the stereotypes more than anything else.
Yeah. He starts the book, you know, great. He's like, I want you to understand, you know, why these things happen and why we think this way and that we're not what you think we are. And then he takes every hillbilly stereotype and he gives you an example of how his family fit it.
Mm-hmm.
The only excuse he ever gave for it was, well, this is the way the Scotch-Irish think, which is really what made me want to throw it against the wall.
Well, I it's really interesting. I've read other books that sort of mine the Scot-Irish ancestry. I myself have Scot-Irish ancestry. And while I do think there's something particularly about the distrust of outsiders that is bred into the culture, I don't know if that's a full explanation for the political leanings. I'll tell you the part that I really like, that really I thought he did a good job of speaking to. And that was the feeling among his family members and his friends and the culture generally of a lack of agency. And he talks a lot about how the military sort of instilled agency in him, in which his culture and his upbringing had not. And that there was this idea that, like, what's the use? What's the point? You know, I don't know if you've listened to Shit Town, the new podcast from This American Life and Serial, but they do a really good job of explaining this. And the narrator calls it, this is going to be a very explicit podcast, but the narrator of Shit Town calls it the fuck it philosophy. Like, fuck it. Like, why do I even care? Like, why should I bother? Why should I show up for the job if something minorly inconvenience happens? You know, I was speaking to a person in my own town about some of the low income poverty issues we had. And she was saying, like, the issue is not that people can't find jobs. The issue is that we can't seem to help people keep jobs. If there's a child care problem or a transportation problem, whereas somebody maybe in the upper middle class would, like, really mine their resources and try to fix the problem, there is this attitude of, like, I don't have any agency to solve my own problems. And so I'll just give up. Like, fuck it. You know, I'll just quit the job, or I'll just stop showing up. And I think that he did a really good job of explaining that. What did you think about that part?
That's a fair point. That wasn't one of the things that I disliked.
Yeah, and I really liked the part about, like, you know, not just the lack of agency, but how each political party, like, contributes to that. Like, one of my favorite parts of the book that I always think about is where he says, like, it's you remove agency from people if you're a Democrat and you say the government is the solution to every problem, and if you're a Republican and you say the government is all the cause of all your problems. In both cases, you are removing someone's agency to solve their own problems and to try to contribute to their own sort of life in a way. Were there any parts of the book that you did like, or you felt like, oh gosh, I had no idea that's how people lived, or anything like that?
I liked that he showed his affection and his respect for his grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout it, you could kind of see that maybe what he was going for was more of a tribute to somebody that he cared about than trying to make a political opinion.
Right. I thought this was a good, Megan, our book club moderator, had this point to make. She said, the first half of the book about the childhood of the author is written in a matter-of-fact way that both educates individuals not familiar with the described lifestyle while challenging those same individuals to dare to pass judgment. This tone is strong yet gentle. The second half of the book has a tone that is not only condescending but confusing. It is as if the author wants you to know he survived adversity and has risen above the people from his childhood, but that he isn't one of the elite and no one but himself can pass judgment on the people from both his past and present. Is that sort of the tone you were reacting to, you feel like?
Kind of. I mean, he does get very judgy once he gets into the military. on his own path. I have split feelings about how much adversity he went through. Because at one point he talks about, he mentions that when his mother was married to the trucker, they brought in $100,000, and that doesn't really say poor to me.
Yeah.
So he spent a good chunk of his life being perfectly fine, just with maybe not fine people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, I think it's fair to say, like, adversity is not just about how much you make. I think that instability of his family life and the death of his grandfather and sort of this just never feeling like you had stable adults. Although I guess, you know, I think his point, too, is that he did have that stable grandmother the whole time that really saved him and that really gave him a chance other kids didn't have to see a way out and to see a path forward. You know, it's, I think, do you remember, I kept thinking about when people had problems with the memoir. Do you remember James Fry, the guy who wrote the addiction memoir and was like on the Oprah show, and then it turns out he lied about a bunch of it?
I remember it. I didn't read the book.
Oh, the book was so good. Like, it's so good. And it's so, we put people in such a tough spot. And I think J.D. Vance is finding that out too, in which we say, you know, tell us a story about your life. Well, the you're not asking me to record what happened to me. You're asking me to tell you a story about my life. And I do think that J.D. Vance did that. And then it became this sort of political, I'm split between defending him and saying, like, he did not ask to become the disciple for all things Trump. And then also saying, like, you know, you sort of walk into this criticism. You should walk into this in anytime you write a memoir with this sort of idea that it's never going to be enough for people. Like, it's, you can't, you know, you're taking your experiences and trying to create this universal narrative, which is inherently risky. And I think he's learning that. I was telling you before we start recording that the movie has been optioned by, it's going to be produced and directed by Ron Howard, and that Twitter is already having a field day. And I do think that's a, if you're J.D. Vance and people are criticizing you for sort of being too condescending and not painting a total picture, like, Ron Howard is not the nuanced pick I would have chosen. to turn it into a film. But hey, what do I know? I'm not his agent. He's cashing some big chips at this point.
You know how you learn to really appreciate how good your products are? Leave town and get stuck with whatever shampoo is in the hotel. I take Pros and their custom hair products for granted, y'all. Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do. From their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. From millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely yours or mine. I never found beauty products that really understood my needs. But ever since I switched to custom hair and skin routine with Pros, I've noticed so many benefits. My thin hair is moisturized but not weighed down, and my waves have never looked better. And Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/pantsuit. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/pantsuit. That's PROSE.com/pantsuit.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, "I cannot believe how young you look." And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off. In previous episodes, I have outed myself as a bed-making fanatic. I am very serious about my bed being an oasis, a gift to Chad and me as we crawl into it at the end of a long day. So I want to return to how much I love my Boll & Branch sheets.
With Boll & Branch sheets, you can discover a new level of softness. The sheets are made from 100% organic cotton in a buttery, breathable weave that truly gets softer every time you wash them. And you know that I like to do that once a week, so my Boll & Branch are rapidly aging like a fine wine. The sheets look great. I have them in a beautiful slate color. They stay put, so making my bed is quick and easy. They are a bestseller for a reason. The signature sheets feel incredible on night one. They are loved by millions of sleepers, and they come with a 30-night worry-free guarantee. Sleep better at night with the softest sheets from Boll & Branch. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code PANTSUIT at BollAndBranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com, promo code PANTSUIT. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The other reason that J.D. Vance has been in the news recently was he posted in New York, he wrote a thing for the New York Times saying that he's moving back to Ohio. Did you happen to see that?
I heard mention of it. I did not read it.
I was
still kind of steaming when I heard about it and didn't really want to read it.
you really had a negative experience reading the book, huh? Like, you didn't feel like there was any positive takeaways?
Well, it had positive takeaways, I guess, but I almost feel like he was an imposter by the time that he wrote it.
Mm. And
he's a 31-year-old white male that ended up in Yale Law School. Like, you made it. You're not the kid that didn't make it.
Right.
The kid that didn't make it's probably going to give me a better idea of what it's like to live there than you are.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. It's like, it's a tough situation because, like, once you've left and have had the opportunity and sort of, you know, amassed the privilege, you sort of inherently need to tell the story to have access to publishers and have access, like, then already your perspective is skewed.
I would be interested to see, because when he talks about some of the people in his neighborhood that use the services that are out there, he's very judgmental about it in his undertone. And I would be curious to see, jump in a TARDIS and go talk to him before he went to Yale Law School and see if he was really that judgmental of those people then.
Right. Well, and I thought he did my favorite part about that is when he talked less about his impression and when he talked about his grandmother and how his grandmother sort of simultaneously made excuses for people, but also harshly criticized their use of government programs. Like, I've seen that in my own life, this idea of like, well, you know, they don't know any better, but they're really exploiting the system. And it's such a tough, I think what he does tap, and I think that's what the media reacted to, is this idea that for huge, and she talks about this a lot in Strangers in Their Own Land, for huge parts of the country, the risk to the American dream is not the top 1% using our system to their financial gain, but, you know, the bottom 10% who people feel are just exploiting the systems. You know, I tell people I'd much rather blame the people with power than the people without any. But for a huge part of the country, I think that the idea that there are people who they see. And I think that's something else I realized reading that book is like, for better or for worse, I don't interact with people using the welfare system. Like, this is not, I don't see people cheating the system. I don't see people buying stuff I don't think they should be buying with their food stamps. Like, and when you do have those interactions, it really does color your perspective.
It can. I've seen it. I worked as a cashier through college. And my husband and I own a multifamily property, and we've had to deal with what in New York is Section 8, help pay your rent. And I don't know, a lot of people around here get very judgy about it. They get very upset when they see the person with a SNAP card buying steak that they can't afford to buy. But you don't know, maybe that person is celebrating an anniversary and they know they're not going to have a lot of food for the rest of the month and they want to make that sacrifice.
Right.
But there are the ones out there that are giving everybody a bad name.
Well, and I like her point. Wait, what? I was reading something recently, and now I can't remember if it was Strangers in Their Own Land. Somebody was talking about a woman they lived with and lived in a neighborhood with and how she never sort of made the financial decisions that were in her best interest. But at the end of the day, like, mentally, you cannot live in constant deprivation. Like, you can't constantly be, nobody, no matter what your financial resources are, makes, you know, perfect financial decisions all the time. It's just not who we are as creatures. And to put poor people in that box and say, like, well, you shouldn't have cell phones and you shouldn't have this, like, is so unfair because we don't do that to people in any other sort of economic situation. I always think a lot about Morgan Spurlock. Remember he made the fast food movie, the Super Size Me. Remember that movie where he ate McDonald's for 30 days? And then he did his show, I think it was just called 30 Days, where he would put people sort of in these same experiments. And the very first one he did, him and his girlfriend lived on minimum wage for 30 days. And his point was like, basically like, you can do it, but you can't have kids. And nothing can ever go wrong. Like, his girlfriend had to go to the emergency room, and that just wiped it out. Like, he's like, you can sort of make it work, but you, like, can't have any luxuries or nice things. You can't have anything ever go wrong, and you certainly can't have kids. And I just thought that was, like, a good, you know, it's, we put people in, we hold them to standards that are really unachievable.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready, our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reads. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love, chance encounters, a slow burn, friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. You guys, I love my Aura frames. I have one in my office. I have one in my kitchen. I have given one as a housewarming gift. I have given one as Mother's Day, Father's Day. They are the most amazing gifts because this app is a game changer, in my personal opinion, in digital frames. It makes it so, so easy to get the pictures on there and even videos. It plays like you're in Harry Potter, you guys. It is the best. I love mine so much. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
So I take it you wouldn't recommend the book to anybody else.
I did recommend it to my husband. I recommended it a few days ago, actually. After I had finished Strangers in Their Own Land, I was like, you should read these. And I kind of handed them both to him because we're a split household. And that was why I was trying to figure out why, like, understand the Trump supporter thinking, because I can't understand it in him. So
your husband is a Trump supporter and you read these books as a try to way to help yourself understand?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So do you feel like it helped you at all?
Because I was a Bernie person and he was a Rand Paul person, and then he became a Trump person.
Oh, so do you feel like it helped you at all?
I think Strangers was more helpful than Hillbilly.
Yeah.
Hillbilly Elegy gives me a good understanding of what it's like to grow up poor in Appalachia, but it doesn't really give me any political understanding to
that. Yeah, I mean, I think hers, the sort of deep story she talks about is so instructive. Did you feel like that really touched on your husband's perspective?
I think a lot of it does. I think the part that she talks about where you care about the environment, but you don't think that the government is the right person to regulate it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that kind of thinking is very much into my husband's way of thinking.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, especially if he's a Rand Paul supporter.
Yeah. He probably would have been happier if Ron Paul had run again. I think he settled for Trump.
I think a lot of people did. I think a lot of people, that happened to a lot of people, held their nose and voted for Donald Trump. All right. Well, we will wrap up this conversation. Our book club pick for the month of April is The Crisis of the Middle Class Constitution, Why Economic Inequality Threatens Our Republic by Ganesh Sitaraman. I hope I said his name right, and I'm afraid I didn't. But I met him at Vox Conversation last year and had really cool conversations with him, and he told me about his book coming out, and so he is going to come. We're going to have an actual author chat for our next book club pick, so that'll be really, really cool. And I'm about 100 pages into it, and I think it's real. Now, it's super legally, so you don't have to necessarily have a law degree, but if that's something you're interested in, his examination of sort of the Founding Fathers and how our Constitution was founded and some historical perspective on constitutional systems generally is super fascinating if that's what you're into. So check it out. The Crisis of the Middle Class Constitution, Why Economic Inequality Threatens Our Republic. And I'll put a link in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us, Jean.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to our producer, Nicholas Holland, and to our Chief Creative Officer, Dante Lima, for all the work they do to make Pantsuit Politics possible, and to all of you for making this community so special. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Pantsuit Politics, or Instagram at Pantsuit Politics. Please leave us your feedback and send us your ideas for show topics and pantsuit primers on social media, or you can email us at sarah@pantsuitpoliticsshow.com or beth@pantsuitpoliticsshow.com.